My name's Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Russell.
Hi, everybody. I know a lot of you guys. You know, some people I know, I don't know. So, this will be different. I think it'll be different. I hope it's different for you. You know, well, for some of you, it won't be different because you've heard me before. How many people haven't heard me before? Well, you can get ready to report this to New York. Now, listen, for those of you who haven't heard me before, there's no use getting upset. It's not important. You don't have to get upset. Just say that you heard something very strange in AA. You think some guy is violating the traditions and killing newcomers. But it's only one guy, so it ain't going to hurt you. So don't worry. You know, it'll work out for you. I'm going to talk a little bit about my experience, strength, and hope. I'm a member of the Carl Gables group, and I haven't found necessary to have a drink since January 17th, 1981, a little over 30 years. It's not a record around here. My sponsor's here tonight somewhere. He drove up with me. He was here. Oh, there he is. He's got 53 years, you know, and he's a good guy. Got to watch out for him. He's a Baptist preacher. I met him in a Bible study. We had a nice conversation on the way up. I'm going to share a little bit of that with you. You know, one of the great things is I heard not in AA, because, you know, it says our book teaches us only a little. You know, it says that in Visions for You. I mean, that's a worrisome thing. The guys we're following, the founders, after writing the book, the very last page says, we know only but a little. I mean, that's got to get you a little nervous, you know. They only know a little, he says, but God will reveal more to you. And in different venues, you know. You don't have to have a chip in your pocket to be a friend of mine. I have a lot of friends who are not in AA. Don't have alcoholism. I hang out with a lot of different guys that are on the same path we're on. And I heard one time a man say, the man you'll be or the woman you'll be in the next 5 years will be dependent upon the people you hang out with and the books you read. And most of you people know that you're probably reading books now. If you're reading books, you're probably reading books that other people that you're hanging out with suggested to you. So the truth of the matter is, the books you read and the things you hear basically are dictated by the people you hang out with. So I guess the man or woman you're going to be in the next 5 years is going to depend upon the people you hang out with. You know, who you're listening to, what you're feeding upon. And I guess that sort of coincides and dovetails into that thing they say in the very beginning when they talk about the steps. They said, if you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. So the taking of the steps and being even ready to take the steps presupposes that you have a we. You have a group of people or a person that you're sort of looking at that person. Not that anybody's perfect or you put them on a pedestal. But, you know, this has always been a program of one person sort of guiding another person. And you go up to, like Dr. Bob had Bill. And then there were people that had Dr. Bob. And always one of those things where you see somebody and you say, you know, I don't know what that guy has, but I wish I could have what he has. I want to have what he has. And then you sort of listen to what somebody says and you sort of guide it along. And next thing you know, you're him. And somebody else is following you. And so I guess this is sort of like what it's about. And, you know, it says on page 29 of the big book, it says, further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we recovered. These are followed by 43 personal experiences. Each individual in his personal stories describes in his own language and from his own point of view how he established his relationship with God. And I pretty much basically believe that's what AA is about, establishing your relationship, fostering and cultivating that relationship with God. And I believe that's what you're supposed to talk about when you're in an AA meeting. You know, I'm not the AA police. I'm not going to tell anybody else what they want to talk about or what they have to believe. You know, my job is to expose my religion, my spirituality, how I discovered God. It's my job is to expose that. My job is not to impose that on anybody. So if somebody gets uncomfortable with this or feels like I'm telling them this is how they have to live, that's really a personal problem. Because, you know, our spiritual axiom says that whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you. It's one of the things we sort of realize in here, that things that disturb us actually help us because they point to something inside of us that needs to be fixed. It's like when I was disturbed about something, my sponsor once said to me, I was complaining about I was disturbed about something. Hey, Roy, I was disturbed about something. So he says to me this. He said, when an alcoholic's disturbed, what are you doing when you're disturbed? You complain about it. I was a thumb-sucking crybaby. You talk about it, right? So, you know, I was vomiting all over my sponsor. So he said this to me. He said, what's the problem? So I told him what the problem was. you know, my wife, my boss, you know, who knows what the problem was. So he said this. This is what he said to me. He said, has anybody here ever been disturbed about anything? Maybe somebody's disturbed tonight. Well, okay. Josh, with you, I just want to say, have you ever not been disturbed? But, I mean, is anybody, you know, well, this is what he says to me. He says to me, as I told him I was disturbed, I told him I was disturbed about it. He says, well, let me ask you something. I said, what? He said, if it didn't bother you, how would you feel? I said, well, what do you mean? I said, well, if it didn't bother you, how would you feel? I said, what do you mean? If it didn't bother me? He says, yeah, if it didn't bother you, how would you feel? You're saying, in other words, if it didn't bother me, how would I feel? He says, yeah, if it didn't bother you, how would you feel? I said, well, if it didn't bother me, I'd probably feel okay. And he said, there you go. There you go. And he walked away. Whatever that meant. You know? I remember complaining to one of my sponsors. I've had three sponsors because, you know, it's hard. All sponsors are temporary because they die on you. But I had my middle sponsor, Joe Snyder, was wonderful. I spent about a half an hour complaining about my wife. She was spending money or talking or something. She was doing something. It was bothering me. It was bothering me. I had a right to be disturbed, you know? I was justified in my anger. And so I explained the whole thing to him, you know, why she bothered me. For about 20 minutes, he listened to my harangue. So after he was done, and I gave him the specifics. She said this, and I said that, and, you know, I was just really sucking my thumb on that one. And he said to me, he said, well, do you know why you're upset? You know, this is sponsor stuff. You know, this is like old-timer sponsor stuff. This is what they do to you. He says, do you know why you're upset? So, I mean, I want you to picture this. You know, anybody ever whine to somebody or, you know, cry to somebody or complain to somebody about something that's happening to them? Am I the only one? I'm it. You know, are you guys alcoholics or what? Okay, yeah. So imagine this. You're whining to your sponsor, whoever you're whining to, for about 20 minutes about something that's really bothering you. You know what I mean? Really bothering you. And he says to me this after I'm done. He said, because you want to whine, you want to vent, and you want the answer, you know? And you probably want to drink, but, you know. But so after I'm done whining, he says to me this. He says, so, Russ, he says, do you know why you're upset? I said, what do you mean? He says, well, do you know why you're upset? I said, what do you mean, do I know why I'm upset? He says, yeah, do you know why you're upset? I said, Joe, of course I know why I'm upset. I just spent 20 minutes telling you why I was upset. And there was a pause. He says, that's not why you're upset. Now, I've been thinking about this shit all day. I've been thinking about this problem all day. He's like the, you know, I'm an alcoholic. He's like the 40th person I've told this problem. You know what I mean? I'm fixing to tell 40 more people about this problem, you know? I'm not going to let this thing go. And I'm thinking about, now I know why I'm upset. I've explained to him why I'm upset. And now here's my sponsor. Here's the guy who's supposed to guide me through life. And I'm telling him, and he's saying, do you know why you're upset? And I said, I just told you. And he said, that's not why you're upset. And then you know what he did? Now, here's the problem. I know he's crazy, but then he just shut up. He didn't start, you know, like I'm just waiting to tell him he doesn't understand, you know, but he just shut up. And I said, well, are you gonna tell me why I'm upset? Because I was curious. And then he says, he does this crap, you know, he says, well, do you really want to know? Do you really want to know, you know, the secret? I said, well, of course I want to know, you know? Why am I upset? He said, listen, stupid, because he loved me so much. That's how he talked to me. He said, listen, stupid. He says, you're upset because you're upsettable. He said, you're upset because you're upsettable. And, you know, whatever I was complaining about, my wife probably money. It was probably money, you know, money. You know, you always get upset about the same things, and money, wife, whatever it is. Whatever I was upset about, I'm sure the same thing's going on in my life. I mean, I'm positive. It's probably worse stuff is going on in my life right now, but it doesn't bother me. As a matter of fact, most of the time I don't even notice it's happening. I sponsor guys. They tell me. That's why I sponsor guys, so they can tell me how terrible things are. They'll tell me that. The guys I sponsor, they notice. Because newer alcoholics, they notice everything. They'll tap me on the shoulder and say, did you hear what your wife just said to you? And I said, no, what'd she say? You know, because, you know, that's what happens. I reverted back to the way I was when I came, when I first came in today. I had only two neurons working, and they were waving goodbye to each other, you know, so I didn't. But I've reverted back. I mean, the longer I've been sober, the more neurons have gone away, and, you know, now things don't bother me because I'm not really noticing. I'm pretty dumb. I don't notice much. I must be dumb because all the guys I sponsor tell me I don't understand, so I don't think I know much anymore. So it has something to do with this deal. Now, I personally think there's a guy who wrote a book called Tozier, A.J. Tozier. He's a turn-of-the-century guy, and he wrote a book called Pursuit of God, which I, you know, when you're in a fellowship like this where you're pursuing God and you're trying to find the higher power and you're trying to find what that's about, a book that says Pursuit of God is kind of, I figure maybe, well, this is the answer. So you start reading stuff like that. And he had this line. When I send that email, sometimes I have this quote, and I'm not going to be able to quote it exactly. I wish I had it here. I'd read it to you. But I sort of read it so many times, I sort of know what he says, because I was talking to John, my sponsor, on the way up here. And let me try to, I just want to sort of like explain, I want to read some things from the book, but I want to sort of explain where I'm at, sort of, and maybe you'll get it. Maybe you'll, I still have that alcoholic tendency to think that nobody will understand, you know what I mean? Nobody will understand, but I just sort of say it anyway, and then I find out people actually do understand. I'm leaving for L.A. I won't be here next week. I'm leaving for L.A. Well, I'm actually leaving for Napa Valley. You know, the grapes need me. You know, the grapes are calling. I have a conference up in Napa Valley on the 5th. I'm leaving on the 5th for Napa Valley, and I'll be up there for about 4 days, and I'm flying into L.A. and doing some things there, seeing my father, and then I'm flying back here, so I'll miss next week. And then in May, on May 9th, I'm flying into Venice, Italy, and I'm going on a sober cruise for about a week. You guys can still get on that cruise if you want to get on that cruise, a whole bunch of sober people down the Greek islands, and then we're coming down, going down to Rome and Sorrento and Capri and around there, and then I'll be back here. So I'll miss a couple of things, but then I'll catch up when I get back. So my sponsor was asking me, and you know, we have a group of guys that sort of we hang out with. We have sort of, it's pretty weird. We have breakfast, lunch, to dinner. At dinner, you know, we have the Law Sheep luncheon, and today we had about 10 guys, and Friday we'll have about 15 guys, and you know, once every month we get about 40 guys together and everything like that. Some of you guys are probably on the list, and you get the different notices of different luncheons. We all hang out, and it's not only AA guys. You know, we get, like, the last luncheon we had. I think three or four preachers. We had the senior pastor, Volkow, the Presbyterian, and an evangelist, a wonderful guy. He's 80 years old. He's an evangelist, and a couple of pastors. And we just hang out, you know, just guys that are on the road, you know, and, you know, just seeking and looking and all sorts of stuff. We just sort of hang out again, and we feed on each other. You know, we just hang out and feed on each other. So, hey, listen, I'm a satisfied customer. I've got that joy of living they're talking about. That's the theme of the 12th. I'm just have a joyous life. I don't have to go anywhere. So on the way up, my sponsor was saying to me, he said, well, are you looking forward to the trip? I mean, you know, the trip to Napa Valley. Well, really, he was talking about the trip to Italy and the Greece and all that sort of stuff. We got a penthouse on the ship, and also it's kind of neat. And my wife's really, you know, I'm really, the truth is, it's our 30th wedding anniversary. And what I'm really looking for, the truth is, I'm glad it's going to make her happy. I'm just glad we're going on it for her, because I'm glad she's going to I mean, that's the truth, because it's for me, that's not the stuff that makes that means, I don't want to say it means nothing to me, because, you know, I mean, it's a nice thing and I'm grateful for it, but it really doesn't mean anything to me. You know, I'm as happy or happier hanging out here with you than on any Greek cruise. I don't need to go anywhere. And one of the things that Tozier says in Pursuit of God, he says the man who has God has everything. You know, he says, has it all in one. Oh, you got the quote? Let me. Can I read the quote? Oh, God bless you.
I read
Josh, you're a monster. This is from Tozier's Pursuit of God. He says, the man who has God, now I want you to listen to this. You know, you read this stuff and then you see it happening in your life. It says, the man who has God for his treasure has all things in one. John, I'm talking here. Well, he's a Baptist preacher. He wants to give an hour sermon, you know, but okay. Come on, John, it's my turn. The man who has God for his treasure has all things in one. Many ordinary treasures may be denied him. Or if he is allowed to have them, the enjoyment of them will be so tempered that they will never be necessary to his happiness,
or if he must see them go one after one, he will scarcely feel a sense of, how do you move this thing? A sense of, I can't move it.
You have to use the little middle thing, the ball.
Here.
Technology rust.
He will scarcely feel it. And then just
he will scarcely, having the source of all things in one, or if he must see them go one after one, he will scarcely feel a sense of loss. For having the source of all things, he has in one all satisfaction, all pleasure, and all delight. Whatever he may lose, he has actually lost nothing, for he has it all in the one, and he has it purely, legitimately, and forever. And you know, I was thinking about my feeling about this trip. You know, it's like a trip of lifetime. You go, you know, and I'm saying, I said, you know, John, here's the deal with my life. I said, whatever I get, and this may not be something you want or it's important to you, whatever comes into my life, doesn't excite me that much. I mean, when I say it doesn't excite, it's unnecessary for my happiness. I mean, I'm grateful for it. It's nice to have, but it's unnecessary for my happiness. It doesn't, it's not so important that if I don't have it, there's a problem. And by the same token, whatever I lose, whatever goes out of my life is not something that I need so much for my happiness that I notice so much that it bothers me. I don't know whether it makes any sense, but you know, the Apostle Paul said a line, he says, I've learned the secret. He calls it the secret. He says, I've learned to be content in all things. He says, I've been rich and I've been poor. I've been in jail and I've been out. And he wrote this in a Roman jail. He says, I've been in jail and I've been out of jail. I've been rich, I've been poor. I have learned to be content in all things. I think one of the last things Jesus said before he left the planet, he says, in this world you will have problems, be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. And one of the things I see when I come into Alcoholics Anonymous is the men. You ever see this? You see old-timers usually. You know, when you come to an AA room, if you actually ever become awake and aware, you see a lot of, you know, whining and crying and gnashing of teeth and people having all sorts of difficulties and seriousness and problems and drama and all that sort of stuff and desperate housewives and crazy stuff going on. And then there's like one guy, he's always the same. He's neither up, he's neither down, he's just there. And he's always got a smile on his face. And he's always nice and he's saying, how you doing? And he's stable. And people seem to come to him. And they flock to him. They ask him to be a sponsor. And when he talks, they listen to him. And he seems to be like this. And you say, man, what's the guy? And you figure he must have $1 million. You know, that's what I figured with Bud Dunbar must have billions of dollars. He must be like Gates, you know, or something like that. And he was a car park over the, he parked cars at the Eden Rock. Because he was always, he was like, I mean, that's so non-alcoholic. And what you ultimately realize is the people that get this thing are like what Tozer is talking about. They have the satisfaction, the joy in the one thing. So the truth of the matter is, whether I go on the trip or whether I don't go on the trip, Richard, whatever it is, I'm absolutely perfectly okay exactly where I am. I'll have a good time. It'll be okay. I'll miss the guys. I'll miss you guys. I'll miss doing what I'm doing here. I'm perfectly fine where it's at. You know, and about 3,000 years ago, you know, this program is very old. It's been around for a long, well, that's our program comes from is very, very old. And about 3,000 years ago, there was this guy named Solomon. Anybody ever heard of Solomon? He was a king. Yeah, David's son. King David, you ever hear of King David? Bathsheba? Yeah, he was David's son. He wrote Ecclesiastes, a whole bunch of other things. There's some debates about that. But one of the things he wrote was something called the Book of Proverbs. And the Book of Proverbs, in chapter 3, verse 5, because this is what really our program is all about. You know, they won't tell you that. A lot of people won't tell you this in AA because they get crazy with religion. I know the book says, you know, we finally force ourselves, we lose all prejudice even after organized, we lose all prejudice even against organized religion. You understand, we encourage church membership. I know the book says that we begin to see where religious people are right, but you have to understand, Alcoholics Anonymous is filled with alcoholics, so they don't really read the book. They just hate religion and hate religious people. And, you know, so if you hang around the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, you'll think like the Bible's bad, religious people are bad, it's all bad, because they'll try to tell you that AA is not allied
with any race, religion, or color. And you know something? Now listen to me. I want to explain this to you so you understand. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, or religion. Or philosophy. You understand that? Okay, now you understand that, and that's true. But here, now listen to me. This is where they miss. But you are supposed to get allied. But you need to get allied. The fellowship is not allied. Nobody can say you got to be a Christian, a Jew, or this, that, and the other thing. But you need to get allied. But alcoholics are allied and become allied with a faith, with a religion, with a God. That's the whole point of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you don't become alive, you're a dead man. This is not a fellowship that says, don't believe in anything. Don't talk about anything. Don't get excited about anything. Don't get joyous about anything. Don't believe in God. Don't, you know, just sort of be like water. So let's sort of be neutral. That's not what this fellowship is about. That's not what the founders were about. They read the Bible. They were passionate about this thing. I'm going to read you some stuff in here. You tell me whether they were lied or not. As individuals in Alcoholics Anonymous, if you want to get this thing, you better get yourself allied. Now, how you get allied and what you get allied and who you get allied with, that's your business. And whether you get allied or whether you understand that is going to determine whether you get mere physical sobriety that lasts for just a little while, or whether you get permanent emotional sobriety and joy that lasts forever. And realize what they're talking about here, what the Apostle Paul realized. It's going to determine, hey, listen, it's your life, and you want to know something? It ain't a dress rehearsal. So when you're 80 years old or 90 years old and you're alone because you've gone through your 15th divorce and you're never able to live with somebody and you haven't had a drink but you're miserable, it's going to be a little bit too late to say, man, maybe I should have listened to that guy. You know, instead of worrying about what other people in Alcoholics Anonymous think of you. You know, so this is like serious stuff. So in Proverbs 3:5, so this program's been around for a while. This is what it says. And I'm gonna read you this. And I'm gonna read you some things from the big book, and you'll see how it's all the same deal. This is Solomon, supposed to be the smartest spiritual guy alive at the time. It's 3,000 years ago. Proverbs 3:5, trust in the Lord with all thine heart, with all thy heart. And lean not on your own understanding. Now, we're on step two tonight. What is it? You know, you come to believe that a power greater than yourself, a higher power, a power greater than yourself could restore you to sanity. Not that you're going to be restored to sanity, or not that it's going to restore you to sanity. That may happen. But come to believe there's a power greater than yourself, greater than you. Later on, we find out what that power is, that can restore you to power. Start believing in a power greater than you. So stop not believing in you and trusting in your own understanding. Start believing in a power greater than you. What it says? Here is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. Trust not in your own understanding. You're not God. Trust the Lord with all your heart and lean not unto your own understanding. In all thy ways, acknowledge him. Acknowledge him. What does it mean, acknowledge him? Say you acknowledge him. God does exist. And he shall direct thy path. That's a far cry from do the next right thing. Because you're so smart. You know, because you're so smart, just that sense is you trust in the Lord. Don't trust in your own understanding. Trust in God. Don't play God yourself. And he will direct your paths so that you will do the next right thing. That was 3,000 years ago. You know, the bottom line is this is sort of like going to Hawaii. Has anybody ever been to Hawaii? No, I've been to Hawaii. Now, look, the truth of the matter is you don't have to go to Hawaii. It's no big deal. It's like Florida with mountains. You know, it's you pay $10,000 or whatever it is to fly that plane over there. But getting to emotional sobriety is sort of like going to Hawaii from Florida here. You know, what's a nice car? You know, let's say Hawaii is like permanent emotional and physical sobriety. And you want to go to Hawaii because you hear Hawaii is like the promised land. You know what I mean? You know, the Israelites walked through the desert like 40 years to get to the promised land. It's like I want to get to Hawaii. You know, I want to get to 30 years. Man, I like what that guy Russell, I like what that guy John has. I like what that idea. That's the prom.
If I could only get there, I don't want to have to wait until 30 years to get there. I want to get there like next week. You know what I mean? Why can't I be like that? Why can't I talk like that? Why can't I be like that next week? So I want to get to the promise. That's the promise. That's my Hawaii. Okay. So Bob Sullivan, Joe Snyder, those guys, that was my Hawaii. I wanted to get to Hawaii. I wanted to get where they're at. You understand what I'm saying? I wanted to be like that. I didn't want to be like the guys in the room who were whining and crying and trying to get laid and talk about money and all sort of the same crap that was going on in the bars when I was drinking. There was no difference. 90% of what goes on in Alcoholics Anonymous is the same crap that's going on in the bars. They're talking the same crap. They're worrying about the same crap, but like with coffee. Listen, I don't want to hang around a bar with people talking and worrying about the same crap and sucking their thumbs and trying to work out how they could feel better even though their money is down or they don't have a relationship or something like that and drink coffee. What's that all about? My life's more important than that. You know, but if you don't want that, then you don't want that. But if you want something, if you want to get to someplace else, then you want to get to Hawaii. Now, here's the deal with Hawaii. Here's the problem with Hawaii. Now, we're all going to Hawaii, so here's what I'm doing. One of the nicest cars, I don't know whether one of you guys have this, a car that I've always dreamed of having. Actually, I couldn't, when I said dreamed of it, you know, I don't have it, I don't care, but the bottom line is that it would be a nice car if it would be, I think it's called an Azure Bentley. Anybody know what an Azure Bentley is? It's a convertible, and it's a Bentley, obviously, and it's like around $350,000, okay? A nice car. You know, a big guy like me, I need something like that. I wouldn't know what to do with something like that. If I put it in my driveway, it would be keyed before the night was over, you know? I couldn't have it down here anyway. But you see, here's the problem. You can have an Azure Bentley. You understand what I'm saying? And we could, you see, Josh and I, you know what I mean? And Rachel and John will all get in the Azure Bentley. And we're going to drive to Hawaii. You understand what I'm saying? We're going to drive to Hawaii. That's the plan. So we drive cross country. Maybe we'll take the southern route. We'll go through the Mojave Desert. And we get up to, let's say, I don't know, San Diego or Los Angeles or something like that to get to Hawaii. And then we got a little problem. And here's the problem, okay? The problem is that once you get to the West Coast in the Azure Bentley, no matter how expensive the car is, no matter how nice it is, no matter how much it costs you, listen to me, you got to trust me on this. Trust me on this. It ain't going to take you to Hawaii. And if you don't understand that, you got to go to another meeting. That Bentley ain't going to take you to Hawaii. You see, if you want to get to Hawaii, it'll take you someplace. But if you want to get to Hawaii, you're going to have to get on a different vehicle called an airplane or a boat because the car won't take you there. Well, mere physical sobriety, hating religion and religious, mere physical sobriety without more, being closed-minded about everything else, without being aligned with that deal, ain't going to take you to Hawaii. That's not the deal that's going to take you to Hawaii. You're going to have to get on a different vehicle. You're going to have to figure out what that vehicle is. If you want what those guys have that you respect in AA, that you're hanging out with, you better hop on their vehicle and learn what their vehicle's all about. You know, and that's sort of like a lead into the second step. So I want to read a couple of things, and you think about what our boy Solomon said about 3,000 years ago, and you tell me whether how different this is from what we're talking about here. Okay, let me go into just a few. And you know something, one of the problems here is I could probably read 100 different quotes, but I just picked up about 10 of them. Okay, so we'll go through them. First of all, page 25. We have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. Sounds like Hawaii. We have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. Now, you can have that. You can find much of heaven and be rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence of which we have not even dreamed. Or you could have 14 years sobriety, and somebody can ask you, how you doing? You can say, hang it in there. You can have that. You know, let me tell you something. About 80% of the people in Alcoholics Anonymous are, on any one day, are hanging in there. You can have that. That's available to you. If that's what you want in your life, if that's what you're shooting for, you know what I mean? I got guys in A, you know what they're saying? He says, I just want to be normal. I said, oh, my God, what if you hit it? Oh, man, you might as well blow your... What if you hit it? That's what I'm here for?
I'm hitting so I can be ordinary, so I can be, how about extraordinary? Right. How about heaven? What am I shooting for here? I'm going to come to these goofy meetings and pay my dollar and drink the lousy coffee so I can be hanging in there, normal, okay, like some of those people I see out there. I mean, you know, listen, I'm sucking on the muzzle of a gun right now if that's the deal here. Guys, just don't settle. There's another thing they say in the sixth step, don't settle. We have found much of heaven. We've been rocking in the fourth dimension of existence, which you had not even dreamed. That's Hawaii. And here's the great fact. Here's the vehicle. They're going to talk about the vehicle that's going to get you to Hawaii. We have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. Who's the universe? God's. Does he say your universe, my universe? It says God's universe. Later on, it says God either is or he isn't. What's your choice going to be? The central fact of our lives today, this is the guys that are in Hawaii. These guys are in Hawaii. It says the central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we can never do by ourselves. And that's said early on in the book, like the first couple of chapters. So none of this crap about, well, if they had said that when I first came in, or it's like postgraduate. No, that's early on. As a matter of fact, not only is it early on, but even when they say working with others, it says this. This is what you're supposed to say to other alcoholics that are new in AA. It says, some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn the truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence upon God. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is he trusts God and clean house. Let no alcoholic say he cannot recover unless he has his family back or anything back. This isn't so. In some cases, the wife will never come back for one reason or another. Remind the prospect. This guy isn't even, he's not even in. He's like a prospect. Remind the prospect that his recovery is not dependent upon people. It is dependent upon his relationship with God. With God. You ever feel like you got to apologize in AA for God or bringing up God? Everybody says you talk too much about God or we don't talk too much about God. Well, I don't know about that because I'll tell you what, in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, I have a very interesting statement about that it says right here, It says, some of us had great self-confidence, but it didn't fully solve the fear problem or any other. When it made us cocky, it was worth. Perhaps there is a better way. We think so, for we are now on a different basis, different vehicle. We're going to Hawaii. The basis of trusting and relying upon God. Trust the Lord in all thine heart, with all thine heart, and lean not unto your own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct your paths. Did you know that Solomon was an Alcoholics Anonymous? You didn't know that, did you? He was working the program of recovery. Perhaps there is a better way. We think so. We are now on different bases. The basis of trusting and relying upon God. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. Right? Where is that from? Vision for you. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role he assigns, just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him. Rely on him. Where did I read that before? Trust the Lord with all thine heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him and he shall direct thy path. Just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity? We never apologize for God. You know, some guy says to you, talk too much about God. You say, hey, we never apologize for God. I don't know what fellowship you're in. Hey, I don't know what fellowship you're in. I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. I never apologize for God. I don't know what fellowship you're in. There's a lot of people in here saying they're in Alcoholics Anonymous. They're not in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because in Alcoholics Anonymous, we never apologize for God. I know because it says in the book, and this is our basic text. I guess they just haven't read the basic text. Or they don't agree with the basic text. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is a way of weakness. Paradoxically, is a way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. He must have been talking about Solomon. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate to us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once we commence to outgrow fear. It goes on to say, we in turn sought the same escape with all the desperation of drowning men. What seemed at first a flimsy reed has proved to be the loving and powerful hand of God. A new life has been given us, or if you prefer, a design for living that really works. If what we have learned and felt and seen means anything at all, it means that all of us, whatever our race, creed, or color, are the children of a living creator with whom we may form a relationship upon simple and understandable terms as soon as we are willing and honest enough to try. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Who's going to disclose? Who's going to give you the wisdom? God, not you. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless other. Abandon yourself to God. Abandon yourself to God. It says that also. It says abandon. You know what that means? That means abandon yourself to God. That means you guys should, here's what it says right here. It says, I'm going to go back to that. It says, abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the records of the past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We'll be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road to happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. And then over here it says, selfishness, self-centeredness. That, we think, is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves. Alcohol is an extreme example of self-willed right, though usually doesn't think so. Above everything, you know what that means? That means above everything. That's very good. Above everything. You know, here's the, you know, somebody, you got a problem? You come up with a problem, you know what I'm going to say? What have you been doing above everything else? It says here, above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of selfishness. Have you been doing that? We must or it kills us. You know, have you been doing that? I don't know whether you've been doing that. Here's what it says. God makes that possible. So I got news for you. If you haven't been doing the God thing, you ain't doing this thing. Don't expect to get the results you're going to get. Don't expect to get anything about this thing. And it says there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. We decided that here and after in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. God was going to be our director. He's the director. Well, that's funny. Where did I see that before? Wait a second. I read that somewhere. Trust the Lord with all thine heart and lean not unto thy own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct your path. 3,000 years ago, God was doing the third step. We had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that here and after in our drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal. We are his agents. He is the father. We are his children. Most good ideas are simple. And this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom. Don't you want that new freedom and the new happiness? Don't you want the new freedom and the new happiness? You know why most people don't believe? You know why most people don't talk about God in AA meetings? You know why? You want to know why? They're scared. You know why? What they're scared of? They're scared that some goofy alcoholic sitting next to them is going to laugh at them or hurt their feelings. That's got to be some sort of really cool sobriety. 30, 40, 50 years old, scared to talk at an AA meeting because some goofball might point at you and laugh at you, and you're so scared of that. Boy, that's a real sobriety to be proud of having. What a life. What a man. What a woman. You got to be excited about having that kind of deal. Walking around in Alcoholics Anonymous, scared about what you're going to say, guarding what you're going to say because some goofball who doesn't even pay your Visa bills might laugh at you. Or the group may not like you. Hey, listen, you can take that sobriety and you can keep it. That's not what I'm after. I'm not after that kind of groupthink and worried about what other people are going to think about me. Because I'll tell you something, that's the farthest thing from self-esteem that you'll ever find on the planet. I don't want to live that kind. I don't know about you, but that's not a new freedom and a new happiness to me. Because my book says fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave you. And if you're scared of people and if you're worried about what they're thinking about you, you don't have what this bullet is getting. You're just hanging around the fellowship. You're just taking up space, saying you're an Alcoholics Anonymous, but you're not getting the promises, I can tell you that. You don't have this thing going on in your life. You don't have the power that these guys had. When Dr. Bob said if you're an atheist and agnostic or of any other form of intellectual fear or worry that keeps you from this book, I feel sorry for you. Your Heavenly Father will never let you down. I'm not quoting from me. This is from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, if you've ever read it. When we sincerely took such a position, trusting in God, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer, being all-powerful. Being all-powerful. It's not only the higher power, it's the highest power, being all-powerful. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Kept close to him, performed his work well. I guess you got to know who he is. I guess you have to have a relationship with him. I guess you got to keep close to him. You better find out where he is. How are you going to get close? And you got to perform his work well. I guess that means you got to know what his work is for you. And you want to find that out. Or you can sit around worrying about stuff. Am I going to go to Hawaii? Am I going to go to on the trip? Am I going to get a car? You can worry about stuff. You can spend all your life worrying about stuff. His work established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves and our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn. And then it says the third step prayer, and right after that it says this. It says, we thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready that we could at last, here it goes, abandon. Did I say that word before? Mm-hmm. Abandon ourselves utterly to him. Now we're not only abandoning ourselves to him, we're abandoning ourselves utterly to him. Hey, you don't like that? Well, you need to write Alcoholics Anonymous in New York. I'll give you the address that's in the book and tell them to take that stuff out of the book. Because some goofball in your meeting or in your home group doesn't think we ought to talk about God. So you got to decide who your higher power is going to be. It's going to be something that flows out of this book, or is it going to be old Charlie at the 6:30 meeting? You better figure out what the deal is going to be. You know, because that's going to dictate who you hang out with and what you listen to, what you decide to say is going to dictate who you're going to be when you're 50, 60, and 70 years old. And what kind of person. That's going to dictate. It's your life you're playing with. That's what the deal is on this thing. We were talking tonight about this stuff. I don't have a clue how to do this. I don't know how to give this to someone. I don't even know why I have it. I know this. Some goofball that's sicker than a banana, who you know will never make it, will latch onto this thing and run with it. And some guy who has everything to live for and is brilliant will never be able to see this thing. And it'll hit this guy, and it'll skip 10 other guys, and it'll hit another guy. I know this. It ain't happened to 90%. It ain't happened to 80%. My sponsors say, hey, many are called, but few are chosen. But I know this. Some people are getting this thing. And I don't know how to do it. I don't know. I have people come up to me all the time. I have the same thing. How do I get my brother? How do I get my sister? They go into 17 treatment centers. You know, 23 rehabs. You beg them. You take them to meetings and everything. They don't get it. And so one guy, it just happens when it happens. Some I know one thing. I have no idea what the problem. I don't have any. It's a God thing. You know, I know it has something to do. I believe it has something to do. I don't even know this. It has something to do with losing total belief in yourself. It has something to do with that. They talk about hitting bottom. I believe each step sort of pushes us into and gets us ready for the next step. And the only thing that holds us back is our own sickness, our own alcoholism. You know, it says, unless and until an alcoholic accepts his devastating weakness. And part of our devastating weakness is our incredible pride and our conceit and our arrogance and our defiance and our need to control. Unless and until we accept our devastating weakness and all its consequences, our sobriety will be precarious. Of true happiness, you'll find none at all. There are people in this room that are never going to be happy, truly happy. And the sobriety will always be precarious because they'll never be able to accept or even acknowledge or understand what the old ideas are, the devastating weakness. Because they can never get to the point where they can acknowledge, they just can't give up the idea that they're in control, that they have no control, that they're nothing. Unless you die to self and understand you are nothing, how can you believe you're anything?
How can you believe you're anything? I can't understand anybody can believe they're anything in this world or they mean anything in this world. And I know for some of you saying, what the hell is he talking about? How can you live in this world and not understand that you may not be alive tomorrow? How could you arrogantly believe, watching what you're watching with planes going down and stuff happening to people, that somehow that you are so great that you will live forever and nothing bad could ever happen to you? Living the life that you've lived so far, how can you believe that you're even going to make it home tonight? How can anybody with a brain, unless you're in such denial about your own power, believe that you're not going to have a heart attack, walk out the door and be shot by a lone gunman, have a sniper take you out, have something incredibly horrible happen? How many people in here have woken up in the morning being happy as crap, having money in the bank, and all of a sudden something happens? As I know everybody it's happened to, out of the blue that you never suspect, that turns your world upside down that you never even suspected. It's happened to every one of you 23 times. All of a sudden, you're happy as a clam, there comes the letter from the IRS. You're happy as a clam, the cop stops you, he says, did you know your license was suspended and you're taken into custody? You think you got the world by the hooses, and all of a sudden this happens or that happens, or you get sick. You all of a sudden you get a phone call. Your mother died. Your father died. You know, it's happened 1,000 times in neon sign that says, you are not in control of crap. And you persist in thinking that you got something to contribute, or you're in control, or you're brighter, you're in control of stuff. And this idea that we're in total control, or we need to be in total control, or we're going to be in total control. We're going to think, yell, push, cajole, because if we yell, here's what happened. One day, when I was 6 or 7 or 9, I screamed at the top of my lungs, and I whined and I cried, and I cajoled and I lied, and I got the candy. Somebody handed me the candy, and I got an idea. I'm in charge. I have control. I'm like Captain Kirk. And I've been screaming, yelling, and manipulating, controlling ever since. I refuse to believe I'm not in control. Every once in a while, the judge says you're going to jail for 40 years, or something happens, and my screaming, my yelling, even my saying, oh, I'm sorry, doesn't work. And I get mad, I get upset, I get depressed, I get bipolar, I need drugs, because how could this be happening? I'm in control, it's me. And people try to tell me, you're not in control. You're just a banana. You know what I mean? When you have that selfish, self-centered, egocentric, you know, defiant attitude, the concept that there's a God and you ain't him, and you need to pray, it's just not going to happen. Unless you're lucky enough to be beaten down so hard and so bad and happens to you so much that somehow there's a window, and I don't know how it happens, where you realize and you look at yourself and he says, man, my life is not in my hands. I'm powerless over this thing. And what's our first step? We're powerless. And what does it say? What's the ABCs? It says, we're alcoholics and we cannot manage our own lives. Not that we have temper. It says, there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. All of a sudden, we understand the full implications. It doesn't say there is one who has 90% of the power. And by the way, he gave you 10%. There is one who has all power. That one is God. May you have him now. And all of a sudden, you realize, like, I don't know whether I'll be alive tomorrow. I don't know whether the plane will crash. I don't know whether I'll make it back from Europe. You want to know? You want to know something? It's in God's hands, but that's okay. I happen to like him. He runs things better than me, and I'm okay with that deal. So what happens is somehow, some way, and I don't know how to make this happen with some, and people are so scared in here to acknowledge that. When they say God either is or he isn't, you know, it says, if you're an alcoholic, you cannot manage your own life. No human power can relieve your alcoholism. Only God could and would if he was so on. And then it says, being convinced of this, convinced, we're now at step 3. And you know, most of the people in Alcoholics Anonymous, even though they say that and they read that at every meeting, trust me, they're not convinced. They're just not convinced. And I'm not saying I'm told. I think the convincing happens over a period of time, if you're lucky. But it does happen. And all I can say is the guys that become convinced are a lot happier. And the guys that aren't convinced can't ever understand how the guys who are convinced could feel happy when they're trusting in a God that you can't even see when I'm in control. Out of the night that covers me, black as the pit from pole to pole, I thank whatever gods may be for my unconquerable soul. In the fell clutch of circumstances, I have not winced or cried aloud. On the bludgeoning of chance, my head is bloody but unbowed. I know which way the wrath will fall, whatever it says, whatever the rest of it. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my... That's what we want to believe. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul. Me, me, me. I'll tell you, Frank Sinatra, I did it my way. He's dead, by the way. He's dead. He's dead. Did it his way. He's dead. Now he's going to have to deal with whoever he has to deal with. He might have been a nice guy. I don't even know. I'd say, hey, we're all going to die. My father's dying. We're all going to get sick. We're all going to get to the end of the deal. You know what I mean? This book is telling us what to do. Proverbs is telling us what to do. The Bible's telling us what to do. Bill Wilson's telling us what to do. Dr. Bob's telling us what to do. There's old timers here telling us what to do. And there's guys in the meeting saying, I don't want to hear about that God crap. And you get to decide what you want. Hey, listen. You know, I don't want to hear about that God crap. Why hang around today? Just go to the bars. They're saying the same thing. It's just a vestige from the bars. So decide whether you're going to become a member of Alcoholics Anonymous or you're going to continue to be an AA, be a guy who hangs out in the bars but be hanging out in AA instead. And so that's all you got to decide, whether you want to really, you know, do something here. Get it? Make a clean break. Make a clean break. You know? Just do it. It sounds scary. It is a scary deal. I mean, remember when I first came in? You know, I was fortunate because I was beaten down so hard and I lost so much faith in myself that I had to, it's so hard to trust. It's so hard to rely on a sponsor, on another person. It's so hard to do that, you know, but somehow, and I can't, I wish I could touch people and I touch them and all of a sudden it happened. I can't do that. You're either there or you're not there. It either happens to you or it doesn't happen to you. But I believe based upon what I've seen in my own life and what I believe and what I've seen in other people, that unless that happens to you and you lose faith in yourself, and it sounds terrible, we're Americans. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Have faith in yourself, you know? I can't explain it to you. People who understand explain it to you. It's not that I don't do the things I'm supposed to do. It's not that I don't have any self-esteem. But I have self-esteem because my esteem is found in my relationship with him, because I know he loves me and he cares about me, you know, and I have a relationship with him. That's the only, I never had worth in myself alone. I only had worth in how I felt about myself through my relationship with him. And I can't explain that to you. You know, like if you don't know, you don't know. And here's the good thing. Some of you guys are going to get this deal. Some of you guys, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, you're going to have this thing. You may remember this. You may not remember this. You may something, because I know you're going to get it because the guys in this book had it. Because I read this book and I know what they're talking about. You know, you ever read something, you know, you hear a drunk log, right? You guys hear a drunk log and you say, that guy's an alcoholic. I know that. You hear a guy talking about it, and you know, I hear a spiritaholic. I hear guys talking from the spirit, from the relationship with God. And I know exactly what they're talking about because that's the way I talk. I don't even need to look at the book. I can just tell you what's going on in my life. And I'll find parts of the book, they're saying the same thing I'm saying to you. And it's not because I memorized the book, it's because it's happening to me. Do you understand what I'm saying? And so I read this book, I don't read this book and say, well, isn't that nice? I'm saying, that happened to me, that's what's happening to me. It's matching up. You understand? It's like I said that my wife said to me the other day, she says, your shirt is wrinkled, and so are your pants. I said, well, I match. I match. I don't even understand what the problem is. So thank you very much. God bless you.